Welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS or at HP Basketball, as I've recently discovered Instagram, mostly because I'm trying to suck up to my wife, who loves Instagram, and so I'm trying to, like, be on that social medium to try and feel closer to her and, like, liking her post of my kids, and I'm sharing, like, heavily filtered photos from the streets of Houston, and that's how I'm staying in touch with my family, is through Instagram. Joining me is James Herbert at Outside the NBA. He is here. We are going to do our hot take cannon. So here's how our game works. We dish out hot takes. The other one judges them on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 means totally reasonable, no big deal. 5 means it's something LeVar Ball would say. And then we reveal how much we feel about it and what we really think about it. James, I will give you first shot. Fire when ready.
Okay. I feel closer to you because of Instagram as well. Just wanted to get that one out there.
It's like my personal, it's like the Instagram, I'm finding that, like, this is actually more of like how my brain thinks, like random observations of like, that's science stupid, or like, or like, oh, hey, pretty sunset. Like, that's actually more what goes through my brain rather than the perception that I have all this deep seated analysis going all the time.
I like it when you're thriving in a new medium. Okay. So I have number one hot take. This is about the Celtics-Wizards from last night. I think Boston showed last night why this is the number one seed. Can anyone believe there was a question about whether or not this team had a true star in the roster? Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, and Avery Bradley are all stars, and this series is over.
It's like a 3. I can't give you any higher because they wiped the floor with them. They wiped the
I wanted a 5. I thought you'd be mad that I was calling Horford and Bradley stars,
well,
or at least Bradley.
Well, I guess here's the thing is, like, okay, in 99% of the world, that take is like a 4. It's a strong 4. In Boston, it's like a minus 0.5. Like, in Boston, that's just like what reality is today. They had an incredible game. I can't fault them. I can't take anything away from them. They're going to win the series, and that's great. We're going to have the number one versus the number two. And, you know, for them, I think for Boston, if they make the conference finals and everything else is gravy, they don't even have to take a game from them. Like, even with the number one seed, they don't even have to take a game from them. That all they got to do is make the conference finals, and this season is a smash success. Got the 150 games, got the number one seed, made the conference finals, get the number one spot in the lottery. Like, great. That's a great season, undeniable. There's no way to take anything away from that. Bradley was incredible in Game 5. Al Horford was even better in Game 5. They didn't even need a huge game from Isaiah Thomas, and they just ran him out the building. The Wizards played like garbage, just absolute garbage, and this is what I should have seen about the Wizards, because I've been writing them all year. Based on the idea that when the playoffs came, they would find their best gear and they would stay at it and they wouldn't just have these letdown games. But they did. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen a game where both teams brought it yet in this series. Like, we have one in Spurs-Rockets only because the Spurs and Rockets brought everything they had in Game 5. They just didn't have very much because they're both exhausted. But
yeah,
we haven't seen
We saw, like, the overtime game. We've seen games where within it both teams have looked really good, but generally not at the same time.
Yeah, they just take turns with one of them being great and the other one being garbage. So I don't know if this is the real Celtics, if the Celtics really are a team where Avery Bradley shoots 80% and Al Horford is arguably the best big man in the league, I must have just been wrong on them. That's just clearly what happened is I was just wrong on them, and they clearly are the fearsome one seed that we all saw. And I don't know, in the wake of Game 5, how you kind of dispute that, except to say, let's wait for Game 6, because both these teams have been garbage on the road.
Right, but isn't that important, though? Like, do you really think that the Wizards are just done? Because I could easily see them tying up this series, and once that happens, it's a coin flip.
Yeah, I mean, I really could. I could definitely see it coming. I just, you know, it's one where the Wizards had a great opportunity to just come out and say, after the first two games, to be like, we blew leads in the first two games, we figured you out, you're done. And instead, they went on the road, and they just didn't show up. They just did not show up. And I don't want to take anything away from the Celtics. They took it to them. But so much of that game was the Celtics just got loose balls off of rebounds or live ball turnovers, ran the other way and made layups. That was like what the majority of that game was, and that's how they established
Al Horford blocking shots and then starting the break.
Yeah.
And them just having so much energy.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the easy thing is to be like, yeah, we'll see what happens when it's LeBron. But it's like, that doesn't matter. Like, all they got to do is make the conference finals, and it's fine. So that's good. So, congrats to them. I've doubted them all year, and they've continuously just managed to, I wouldn't say, like, rise to the challenge as it necessarily won, but they wind up on the right side of it when they need to. And that's,
I will say that was, like, yeah, that was, like, a really great time for that Al Horford performance, and he's been amazing all playoffs. Like, his passing has been unbelievable. It feels like he never misses a shot. Like, his efficiency in the playoffs is unreal, but I thought last night was something a little different. Like, he really was aggressive and assertive and I think on both ends, he was really making plays and not just kind of fitting in. Like, he was standing out all game. And when he's like that, and like, we saw that in Atlanta every once in a while too. But it wasn't every night, but I think when he is like that, that makes them so much better. And that's specifically because so much pressure has been on Isaiah all season to make plays, and the Wizards are directly trying to take him out. If Horford plays like that, it just opens up everything else.
I mean, look, all right, fine. Here's the hot take. Okay.
Yes, give me your hot take.
Great Game 5 performance. This is not the real Celtics. They're never going to play like that again, and they're going to get smoked no matter what happens the rest of the way. They have zero chance against the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is not who the Celtics are. They had nice outlier performance, but we've all seen this from Al Horford before, and we know how it ends. We've all seen this from the Celtics before. We know how it ends. This team is not going anywhere further, and they've already gone a long way, but this is where the show stops for them.
I don't think that's that hot a take at all. That's like a 2.
Yeah.
If you were to say that it all crumbles now and they lose these next 2 games and we're going to see the season completely differently, then I'd be like, all right, that's a hot take. If you're going to say Game 5 was like completely meaningless. But I don't think after what the Cavs did to the Raptors that most people think either the Celtics or the Wizards are going to give them much of a challenge. And yeah, Boston, I mean, I really like the makeup of the team, but like, there's a reason last night was so impressive. It's because that's the first time in these whole playoffs that the team has looked like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's impressive they did it without Isaiah. It's really weird that they only have kind of 2 modes, which is everybody plays well together, and then Isaiah saves them. That's like their two good modes. Is either like Isaiah just does everything for them or everybody else does everything and Isaiah is kind of in the background. It's a weird kind of balance, but that's good that they showed that because that was kind of the question, right? Is like, we were like, well, what happens if Isaiah doesn't show up? And then the answer is Avery Bradley hits 8 of 9 and what are you going to do then? And the answer is,
but it's not even not showing up, right? Like, he had 9 assists.
Yeah.
It's not like he played poorly. It's just, he didn't have to dominate the ball.
Right. Right. He made smart plays and they made a punch and they're learning a lot in this playoff series. That's another thing, is like, they're learning to be a better playoff team. Which credit to them, because the Raptors certainly never learned that. So, like, it's good that they were able to figure this out, and it will help them going forward, is maybe they'll be a better team as the playoffs go on, since they're having these kind of performances. And that's really strong. Okay, here is actually a hot take, all right?
Okay.
Enjoy this run for the Celtics, because this is the last year that you're going to see it. The salary cap is going to end this configuration, and when that happens, all of the specialness about this group goes away.
That's a 3, because I don't think that timeline is right. Like, I think this team could still look pretty similar next year and still be really good. But eventually they're going to have to make some tough decisions. Like, the idea of both Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas being in this backcourt, especially if they draft another guard in June, which seems extremely likely.
Plus, they're gonna have to plan for the future for Terry Rozier's max contract. So,
there is that.
So, for those who don't know, here's the deal. Next summer in 2018, Marcus Smart is going to be a restricted free agent. Avery Bradley's contract expires. Isaiah Thomas' contract expires. And they'll obviously be in the second year of whoever they grab in the first round. If they do not take Josh Jackson, that's presumably going to be a guard. If it's one or two, they effectively have to take Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, or trade it. And if they trade it, they're picking up even more salary because they're only trading that for a superstar. So you're talking about $50 million that you would be committing, because Avery Bradley is not coming back for less than 20. He's in his prime. This is his first big deal. He is worth it. He's going to demand $20 million. Like I saw today, J.J. Redick's going to ask for $20 million. And if J.J. Redick at his age is going to ask for $20 million, Avery Bradley's damn sure going to ask for $20 million. And yes. Isaiah Thomas, rightfully, is going to be like $30 million. So you're talking $50 million for Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, which doesn't sound like a great, great plan if you're trying to like build a contender. But then it's also somebody. I made the comment last night. I was like, oh, pay attention to Avery Bradley here, because he's probably the odd man out. You can get him. And then somebody that's really familiar with the team hit me up and was like, I don't know about that. Danny really loves him. And I was like, so they're gonna keep Avery and Isaiah? Because that's gonna be the question. And that's why you hear people.
I mean,
like,
maybe you move smart. Maybe don't draft a point guard. Maybe you don't. I don't know.
It's why you hear people like Bill Simmons talking about how he thinks they're going to trade Isaiah. Like, that's why there's a real conversation about trading Isaiah Thomas, and it's going to continue. And at some point, that's going to get uncomfortable, because if you're Isaiah Thomas, you've got to be like, the hell do I have to do? Like, I was Mr. Irrelevant in the draft. I worked my way into being a sixth man of the year. I was sixth man. I worked my way into being a starter. I was starter. I worked my way into being an all-star and an MVP candidate. What more do I possibly have to do? And at the same time, if you're the Celtics, you have to be like, you really have to think about it. Can we win a title with Isaiah Thomas as the best player on the team? Like, that is how you have to address it. Like, what team would we have to put around where Isaiah is the, not even the best, Isaiah is the ball dominant Isaiah team. Like, he's Isaiah. He plays his game, and they can win a championship. How do you do that? Now, let's say that they go into next round and they steal game one versus the Cavs, and they push them to 6 or 7. Now it's really interesting, because if you get that close, don't you almost have to be like, this team, does that prove to you that this team can win?
Maybe. I mean, it depends how the series feels. If it's like the Raptors last year, where they won 2 games, but the 4 times they lost, it was a blowout, it'll feel a little different. But if it's a genuinely competitive series, then yeah, you probably don't want to do anything drastic. I think one thing I know I'm guilty of when talking about how a team projects or what they should do or what kind of moves they should make or who they should draft is like almost ignoring the present, like it's not important. And I think it's really easy to be like, well, you're going to lose Avery Bradley next year, so like you should just trade him, get something back for him before he leaves. But there's no scenario where that helps you next year. And next year, like, it matters on some level. It depends organization, how much that year matters. But I would say it matters more if they actually push the Cavs. And at that point, maybe you'll risk losing him for nothing because you want to be as good as you can in the short term. I think that is a calculation every team makes. And it's not as simple as we sometimes make it out to be, or I sometimes make it out to be. So yeah, I think that's why, I mean, they still have to get past the Wizards, so let's not discount that. But I mean, that there is a genuine question of like where this team's ceiling is right now, and where it can be with a top pick, or where it can be with a trade for another star, right? Because all of that stuff is still on the table. Like, as far as I know, Paul George hasn't committed to Indiana, and Jimmy Butler hasn't told everybody that he wants to stay in Chicago for the rest of his career. Like, that stuff hasn't happened. So these options are still, like, we're going to be talking about all of this stuff in the offseason, and not just the possibility of Isaiah trade, not just who are they going to draft. It's like this entire team, for a team as good as the Celtics are, there are still so many different directions this can go.
And they have options, and that's good. Options are good. Hit me with your second hot take.
The MVP of the playoffs is Kobe Bryant. he gave Isaiah Thomas advice, and look who's up 3-2 in the second round. If I was John Wall, I'd be desperately trying to contact Kobe before it's too late.
Five. You get a five. Congrats. That's, I think it's your first yes. five. Excellent job. Excellent job. Man, Kobe, Tim Duncan hasn't done media, hasn't taken questions. Tim Duncan's actually around the Spurs and actually helping them. And Kobe Bryant, like, there's been, you keep asking the Lakers, like, have you talked to Kobe? And they're like, no. Like, and he's like, I'm always around if you want to call. It's like, okay, I also don't know what you're getting. Like, what is Isaiah Thomas getting from Kobe Bryant? Like, what is he actually getting from him that's helping him?
I mean, Isaiah's talked about it. They've gone over film together. Kobe's given him advice, and he's pointed stuff out about the way he's being defended. And I think in general, I mean, they had a very widely publicized conversation last year when Kobe was on his farewell tour, where they just, like, hung out in the locker room and talked. And I think Kobe basically encouraged him to kind of play like he's playing now and just try to be a killer. And I don't know, like, it sounds like he's genuinely helping. Like, I do believe that getting, like, personal, like, one-on-one, like, film advice from Kobe Bryant would help anyone, because he's super smart. But I do think, yeah, like, the parallel to Duncan is, like, really funny, because Kobe does not seem involved with the Lakers at all. It seems like he's involved with, like, the guys who he feels have, like, earned it. So he'll talk to Russell Westbrook. He'll, like, work out with Gordon Hayward. There are, like, certain guys that he's picked out that he likes. Isaiah's on that list. And he'll make an effort to give them advice and to be there for them. Remember, he had dinner with Durant last year too, and I think we've seen that sort of personality shift from him, even if you look back, like, a couple Olympics ago, where everybody was talking about him being people's mentor, and it felt really weird then, because he was always such a freaking loner and, like, kind of crazy in his dedication. You'd never expect anyone else to be like that, but I do think this is legitimately something he cares about.
All right, I have a hot take response.
Yes.
James, this only goes to show you. This just goes to show you that the great things about the NBA, the rivalries, are dead. This is a Laker helping a Celtic. This is a Celtic getting help from a Laker. Magic wouldn't do this. Larry Bird wouldn't do this. KG wouldn't do this. This is a disgrace.
I'll give it a 4. I want to give it a 5 because there was just so much passion there. And, like, KG would totally do this. He's consulting for, like, 5 different teams right now. But this was a more muted version of that opinion, a more moderate version of that opinion, like, was actually voiced in the past week by people. So I can't give you a full 5.
I'll take the 4. I do think it's kind of weird, just because, you know, they talk about, like, Celtics and Lakers, and then it just really is that. My big thing is I'm just a little skeptical. It's like, what's Kobe's advice going to be for him? You should shoot more. Okay, that's a real problem for Isaiah Thomas, shooting more. You should take more contested shots. Copy that. I understand that's I can do that. I mean, what? Come on. What is he going to help with? I don't understand this.
Take fadeaways. Yell at your teammates. Give yourself a nickname, Isaiah.
Although, he's facing the Cavs in the next round, and Kobe does have a lot of experience in losing to LeBron, so I'm sad they never faced each other in the finals. I'm so sad they didn't. They should have met up in 2009. It should have been Kobe versus LeBron. That would have been,
everybody wanted it, yeah.
It would have been so incredible.
It's very weird that it just didn't happen.
I love that Magic team, and I saw it coming, too. That was one of the few ones I saw. Like, I was working at Fan House. I told Matt Watson, I was like, the Magic are making the finals. And he was like, you're crazy. You're crazy. Nobody's beating LeBron. If they do, they're not beating the Celtics. And I was like, they can shoot. This is the one time that I was actually ahead of the shooting thing, and then I completely forgot about it. Like, I was actually like, no, like, they shoot all these threes, and other teams can't keep up because they can just bomb. If they get hot, like, they're just going to outscore you. And then I completely forgot that and went away from it for like 4 years and got completely blindsided by this revolution in shooting. because I do not actually pay attention to things. All right, what's your next hot take?
All right, I don't care about Otto Porter's supposed versatility. The man is shooting 4-for-17 from three-point range in this series. That's his best skill, and if he can't do it when it matters, there's no way he should get anything close to a max contract this summer.
Bringing the heat today.
Yes.
I'll give you a 5 because it's so dumb. That's a 5 because it's so dumb. Like basing contract off of one series and
he's saying, also like played pretty well in this series.
And saying that's his one bad. Yeah, saying that's his one skill. Yeah, man. I mean, look, the second round really has become like make or miss. Like that's what it's become is make or miss. And if the Wizards were able to hit more consistently, they'd be up, and they're not, so they're not, and the Celtics are bombing from deep, so they're up in the series. I love Otto Porter. He should definitely get the max. They should offer him the max on day one. He is everything that you want in a modern stretch 3/4. The Oklahoma City Thunder would be better if you swapped out Andre Roberson, who is a legitimate all defense candidate. If you swapped him out for Otto Porter, they'd be better.
Way better.
If you swapped out Danilo Gallinari for Otto Porter, the Nuggets are better. If you swap out Blake Griffin for Otto Porter, are the Clippers better?
Oh my god. Look,
I'm just asking.
Maybe but that's because of the like weirdo construction of their team. Not
right,
just,
but my idea here is not like Otto Porter.
Is a way better player than Otto Porter.
Yeah,
but
he's a way better. But my question is, if we've seen this constantly, where it's like one dynamic playmaker and then four shooters, right? Like, what if you put if you put Otto Porter into that system, and he did that, that might actually be better. But there's all these teams Otto Porter would make better, and if they do not immediately re-sign him for a max, they are foolish and should not, under any circumstances, let him go. And they won't. They know that. So he's gonna get paid either way. Okay, hot take. These NBA playoffs are the worst we've ever seen. Because of how boring they are. We're all just waiting for Cavs, Warriors, and there's no point to any of this. We should just reduce the playoffs to 2 rounds.
Wow, Well, I didn't see that ending coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a 5 out of the end.
Get the extra spice
at the
on
first,
it.
I thought this was, I've heard this take before, and then you get to 2 rounds. So, your 2 round theory, you would just, like, make this like baseball, basically. Like, yeah, only a tiny percentage of the teams would actually qualify for the playoffs.
Yeah, like 4 teams make it from each conference. No, we'll do 3 and then a play-in. That's what we'll do. We'll do 3 and a play-in. So you'd have the Rockets and Jazz play one.
Oh my god.
And then they get in and they have to, yeah, that's how we do it. That'd be great.
I don't think you believe that take at all, by the way.
I acknowledge it feels pointless. Like that's down here. People are talking about it down here. Like the media is talking about it here. Like a lot of us would love to be wrapped up in this series and heavily invested and feel like there were stakes. Like this could be Monte Ginobili's last 2 games of the NBA playoffs, depending on what happens in game 6. We're recording this late Thursday, so it'll be up just a few hours before game 6. There's all these things that could happen, you know, like Mike D'Antoni falls once again to Greg Popovich, and you know, can the Spurs? You know, the Spurs finally they're going to get to the conference finals, and they won 61 games, and they've got Kawhi Leonard, and there should be all these stakes on the line, and it doesn't feel that way. It feels like the Warriors are going to roll almost no matter what, and the East it's the same. Like nobody thinks the Wizards or the Celtics have a real chance. Now I keep waiting for like sports just does this. Like weird stuff happens in sports. That's what happens. And I keep waiting for sports to throw us a curveball. But I also asked Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post this morning. I was like, what if this is the year that doesn't happen? When like everything actually does go chalk. That's just the two best teams beat all of their playoff opponents, and then they play each other in the finals. My more interesting question is, everyone's hyping up. Everyone's basically like, we're just wasting time. Like somebody in my Twitter mentions today was like, can we just speed up and start Cavs Warriors now? And I'm like, what if that series isn't any good either?
That's possible.
Like, what if the Cavs just do not have it? Like, what if they just get run? You know? Like,
yeah, I mean, I that's in the cards.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to predict that.
And hey,
that feels we'll disrespectful to what LeBron has been doing.
And then we'll be fair. This will be a huge, a much bigger story. But like, just to be fair,
what if the Cavs run them?
Yeah. What if the Cavs run the Warriors? What if they took, you know, what if they took one the game one in Oakland, won both at home, and then took game five in Oakland?
I mean, I don't know how the Warriors are losing, but sure, that's the hot take.
The entire Twitter would just erupt into a giant hot take volcano on the Warriors.
Yeah, we all wouldn't know what to do. We'd just be like, all right, LeBron's the best player of all time, and I don't know. All right, well, I have a response to everything you just said in the form of a hot take, if that's okay.
No.
So I know you are all excited about covering Spurs Rockets game 6, but if you were a real journalist, you'd stay home and take a stand against this ridiculous top heavy league. Everyone knows the series doesn't matter because the stupid stacked Warriors are just going to sweep whoever advances. So analyze that, Matt. Stay home. Stay in your hotel. Write about how nothing matters.
I always ask Rob Mahoney from SI, who I've known forever. I'm always like, what do you think of the series? Because I ask that to everybody I run into, and when I'm covering a series, I'm like, you know, what do you think? And every time he looks at me and he's like, I think nothing matters. I think life is meaningless and we're all just adrift in a void of chaos. he just responds with a nihilist quote. So yeah, nothing matters.
Shout out to Rob.
Nothing matters. Do you find... This is the debate that's coming. So Turner put out a release the other day that says the playoff ratings are up. And this is kind of what I've kind of come to. People are going to watch the NBA playoffs regardless, and I don't think it matters how good they are. They're going to watch them because it's live sports, and we'll watch live sports no matter what they are. We won't enjoy them unless they're competitive and fun and compelling. And these playoffs have not been, and the finals may not be, but the people are going to come anyway. And if the people are coming, the league is never going to be like, oh, this is a problem. I mean, they will. Like, the league is more sensitive to their perception than they are than any of the other leagues are. Like, they actually do care what people think of them and what their fans think of them. They care about that stuff, and I admire them for that. Like, Adam Silver will be like, it's not good that everyone's talking about how lame these playoffs are. That's bad for our business. Right. That's bad for our model. The argument essentially comes down to this. The NBA has always prospered in times of great disparity. They want these super teams are what has put them on the map because it captures general fan attention. And the idea is casual fans tune in, and that increases ratings, and that helps you get your big media deal, which you already got, by the way. And you make all these billions of dollars, and that's how they went from nothing to being this monolith was super teams. It was first the Celtics and the Lakers and then the Jordan Bulls, and that's what put them on the map. And so that's always kind of been the model. And the question has kind of been evolving where in the NFL, every season, 25 teams have fans that believe if everything goes right, my team can win the Super Bowl. Every season, 25 teams have fans that can go in and say, you know what? This could be our year. I could see it happening. If this goes right and this goes right and this guy stays healthy and if we can get this out of him and if the running game picks up and if the line is good, then we can win the Super Bowl because you have to win 4 games, right? At most, you have to win 4 games. That's it. 4 games. In the NBA, that is not how it works. And the problem is we went from there's only a handful of teams that can win the NBA title to 2. And that gap feels significant because it's not like this is a new thing. Like, we've always kind of been like, well, there's 5 or 6 teams that you can really say can win a title. Like, if you go back to the mid-2000s and you would look at the Pistons and the Bulls were a legitimate threat with that core with Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and those guys. The Heat, you had the Spurs, you had the Mavericks, you had the Suns. And I'm sure that there were a few others in there that you could throw in there as well. And that was like the mid-2000s was you had 6 to 7 teams that you could say, look, they can win the title. The Spurs were never so dominant that you were like, they're just going to repeat and they're just going to win. That was never how it was. The Spurs snuck out of nowhere. They had that incredible run between 99 and 2005 where they won, you know, what, 3 of 6 or 7 of titles. But then really it was like 2007 came out of nowhere because that was the product of the Mavs getting beat in the first round by the Warriors. It took an unprecedented upset for that to clear the way for that title. there was a question of who was going to win. We don't know who's going to win. And you could take different teams and be like, it could be this team or this team. And now, if you don't live in Cleveland, and I ask you who's going to win the NBA title, you say the Warriors. Like, if you don't live in Cleveland, and you're not just like, I believe in LeBron because I believe in LeBron because he is the best. That is your only argument. If you're actually saying, like, well, who's the better team? Like, which team is probably going to win 4 games out of 7? Everyone's going to say the Warriors. You're not going to say, like, well, I think the Warriors will win, but if they get in the wrong matchup, no. We're not in if they get in the wrong matchup anymore. That's gone. The Warriors are so good, there's not a matchup problem. The playoffs have been about matchups forever. It's not just how good are you, it's who do you match up with? Can you beat this style? What about your weaknesses? The Warriors don't have any. And so the question now is that good for the league that everyone knows one of two teams is going to win the NBA title, and that's it? And is that a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's personal preference. Like, personally, I really like the idea of those specific two teams meeting in the finals again, because I love seeing, like, the best of the best play against each other. I can totally understand if you're allegiant to one team and you just feel this whole thing is futile, then, like, being bummed out about it.
But
what I would say at the same time is that I don't like this general idea that NBA fandom, or even, like, covering the NBA, that all we should care about is the end result, and that all we should care about is who wins in the finals or who gets to the finals. I remain interested by the day-to-day in the NBA, regardless of what it means for the finals. That doesn't mean that I won't cover that. That doesn't mean I won't analyze, like, a mid-season trade through the lens of, like, what does it mean for their ceiling this year? Like, will it actually change how far they can get? Like, of course. Like, I think about it that way, too. But I don't think it's all about that. I don't think the Celtics season should be about whether or not they get to the finals. Like, as you said earlier, it's going to be a success if they get to the conference finals. I think even if they lose these next two games, it doesn't throw it away. It doesn't make it worthless. And, like, there are teams that didn't make the playoffs that, like, I really loved watching on League Pass and that I loved talking about. And it's just, I think it's really reductive to assume that, like, all that matters is, like, the race to the top. And of course, it does matter, but that's not it. That's not the whole picture. I don't think that's what covering the NBA, following the NBA, watching the NBA is all about. And I think it sort of cheapens it to be like, oh, this is a catastrophe. This is bad for the league. How can this happen? Like, well, I mean, it's the reality, and it's the reality partially because of this, like, enormous fluke that happened with the timing of when the money came in and when Kevin Durant happened to be a free agent and when Stephen Curry happened to sign his contract extension, and all of these things came together to produce this Warriors team. And LeBron James being born in Akron is what produced this Cavs team, not because of any sort of brilliant management. Some of the changes that the league has made to the new CA or CBA are directly trying to make this more difficult and trying to make stars stay where they're drafted. And the realities of the salary cap have us talking about lesser teams than these super teams, like the Jazz or the Raptors. Like, how are these guys going to keep their core together? They can't. Like, they literally can't, because it's even hard to be that good. Because they it's not like the league is just like, oh, this is great. So we know where they stand. We know this is a bit of a freak thing. And to me, I'm like, let's just, like, the optimist in me is like, well, this means we could have a really great finals. We had an awesome finals last year.
Do we?
You don't think we had an awesome finals last year? The best comeback that we've ever seen?
No, I don't. There's a hot
take. That's a hot
take.
Yeah, that's a five.
The best finals I've ever seen was the 2013 NBA Finals. Those were two great teams that went toe-to-toe. You thought that either team could win either one. The three of the first...
I'd agree that was better.
But
that was also, like, people were just as upset about the Heat getting together. It was a moral panic about that, too.
It was different, though. It really was different. And you felt like the Heat were vulnerable. And people said, like, I don't know if they're going to win or not. And then they didn't. And with this Warriors team, it is different. You know, in that series in 2013, every team, like, you could see either team winning any of those games. In 2016, the Warriors basically blew them out in 3 of the 4. And then the comebacks happened, and the Cavs blew them out in 5 and 6, like, or won comfortably in 5 and 6. And then it came down to Game 7, and Game 7 was amazing, and it's an all-time, like, you'll never forget that one, with him crying into Kevin Love, and, you know, mm-hmm. Steph getting shut down by Kevin Love, and Kevin Love's in a lot of this, and the block Kyrie shot, like, that had a million memorable, iconic moments in it because of the comeback. But as far as being a great finals, I didn't find the execution to be stellar. Because
the execution was not nearly on the level as the Spurs.
But that's part of it, though. Is if we're gonna say, if your argument for the Spurs and Cavs being, or Warriors Cavs being good is, I want to see the best. I love to see beautiful basketball. Well, okay, but you're only seeing it from one team. Like, you're only seeing it from one squad, because that's typically how most Warriors games go. Is they look awesome. Because here's part of it too, is there is a negative effect on the league, and that what you just mentioned, like, there's all these teams that should feel good. You're right. A lot of these teams are really good. I don't think the product was bad this year. Look, I've seen bad NBA products. Go back to 2001, like the Sixers, the team that made the finals, the Nets team that made the finals. Those teams were wretched. The league was bad in the early 2000s. The league is awesome now. And
I totally agree. Best it's ever been.
But here's a problem. Here's a problem. No matter how much you may say, like, we shouldn't reduce it to this, that, or the other, there still has to be a reasonable chance for those teams to be able to win a title. There has to be a reasonable hope that if everything goes right, and if you have all, if you have the talent and the coaching and the chemistry, that you can put all that together and you can win a title. And no one thinks that right now. No one. Because you have to go through the Warriors, and the Warriors have too much. Like, it's not about... It's about... whether or not you can reasonably believe that any team has a shot, and you can't. And that's what makes it feel like, okay, because there are, in the playoffs, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, it's just, there is always that next round. Like, a series victory is just never a victory. It's always, there's that next round. And especially for the teams that are serious and are really good. It's worse for the teams that are really good. Like, the Jazz are able to actually be pretty happy. They went from not making the playoffs to beating the Clippers in the first round, and then they went out in the second round, sure. But, like, the Warriors in 2013, they went from being out of the playoffs and being a laughingstock to making the playoffs, crashing the party, beating the Nuggets, and going up against the Spurs, having a good showing, and that left, like, a lot of good feelings. It wasn't about, like, them winning a title or not. It was just like, hey, we crashed the party. And now, it just feels like no one's, like, it feels, with the Spurs and the Rockets, it just feels like your hopes was for, like, your hope, your reasonable ceiling, like, the goal that you would have in any other year is, yeah, no, we have a shot at winning the title. And this year, nope, you can't beat them. And I think that that's corrosive to a degree. I also think, you know, you talked about the CBA changes. I actually think that this is going to backfire. So they let Durant, they didn't force the NBPA into the cap smooth, which I don't blame them for. Like, they were like, we have this money coming in, and the players were like, no, like, we want the money. And then the league was like, we're not going to say no to the money, and you said no, and we can't force you into it, so okay. And then this happened, and now they made changes to where it's easier to retain your own player. But that's actually just going to make this problem worse, because what you're going to have is you're going to have guys stuck in situations where they can't make an impact. They're just going to have good seasons at best, versus the only real way to combat this because of what happened is to team up. That's the only way to battle it, is you have to have, like, three guys be like, look, let's get together in our primes and let's make a run at the Warriors. Because, like, the Banana Boat crew can get together and make a run, but those guys are all over 30. It's not going to make a difference. Like, Dwayne Wade, Chris Paul, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony could team up next year, and I would still take the Warriors. What does that say?
I mean, it depends who else is on their team, right? But, yeah, I get it. And I don't dispute that there's less of a, oh, we're trending in the right direction, who knows what'll happen. Like, I think the Jazz feel that to some degree. Like, they feel like they had a successful season. If they keep Hayward in hell, then they'll feel really good about where they're going. But there's still this, like, looming question that's kind of hanging over everything, which is like, all right, but what would it take to actually break through? And, like, can that happen in 2 years, in 3 years, in 5 years? And as long as the Warriors keep their core together, and by their core, I mean, like, their top four guys, because they're going to have to change some of the other parts of the team. Then it's going to be a big mountain to climb. And as you said earlier, like, sports just tends to surprise us. Wrenches tend to be thrown into things. I still believe that. I still look around the league and I'm like, well, what will, like, these Wolves look like in a few years? Like, Karl-Anthony Towns is a transcendent player. And what can these Pelicans be with AD and DeMarcus Cousins? Like, I'm still interested in that kind of stuff. I look at the Bucks and I'm like, all right, in like 4 years, like where will they be? Where will the Cavs be? How good will LeBron be when he's 36? Maybe he'll still be amazing because he keeps refusing to get even a little bit worse. I don't know. But yeah, in the short term, I think it's an issue that fans have, and I think it's certainly an issue that front offices have. And we've been talking about that a little in the Celtics context, is like, why should they rush to do something if maybe next season doesn't matter as much as 3 or 4 years down the line? Like, maybe being patient is the best thing for every team to do. And even that gets complicated because it's like, if you want to be patient, then you want to be flexible. And every time you have to pay your star like 25, 30 million, then that makes it a lot harder. Yeah. So I think
everyone's constantly rebuilding.
Yeah. So everybody's constantly like trying to figure out what to do. And I think that makes like general managing a harder job than it's ever been.
I also think that there used to be kind of like a, there used to be a certain flow to the season where it was the early season, people, you know, teams are kind of testing it out and they kind of flow through, and then Christmas comes and there's the big games and it kind of ramps up and it gets more intense in January, and then the All-Star game comes and then teams kind of coast into the playoffs. And what it was is, like, you would have all these storylines that were really compelling, and that's what you're talking about. It's like, take joy in these, like, smaller things. But they all led towards a ramping up of a direction of pressure and, like, competing forces of which team is going to win the title, who's going to come out on top, who's got what it takes to win, which team can surprise, who is your sleeper, who do you think is better than people think. And now, it's just so, it is reductive. You talk about reductive. There's nothing but reductiveness. There's nothing but reduction, because everything is reduced down to the Warriors have Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, and Kevin Durant. And there's just no response to that. And this has been my thing in the entire season. I did a podcast before the season with Tim Bontemps, and I was talking about how he moved out to the Bay, and I was like, I think it's going to be kind of boring. He's like, no, it's not going to be boring. Are you crazy? Like, there's all these things. This is a really fascinating team, and like they're capable of like amazing things. And Tim still enjoyed covering them, and he loves the team, and in terms of like covering them, they have great PR staff, they've got good guys that are interesting, and they're an excellent squad, but it's kind of boring because they just kill everybody. Like, it was interesting there for a month when they were bad, not bad, when they were vulnerable, but now it's just like, and this is the thing is, and we've talked about this, I don't know how to do analysis off of the Warriors. This is my biggest thing, is the reason I do this for a living is because I am constantly finding things that are interesting to talk about with anybody. Like, you can give me any team and I could be like, this is really interesting, or that player, like, how good can he be? Like, the Celtics are fascinating in that they can do all of these different things. Like, there's a million different ways they could take this team. That's really interesting, even if I don't think that their entire core is necessarily that great. Like, that's still a really interesting team. With the Warriors, I don't know how to do analysis on them. It's, well, Draymond's going to beat everybody for rebounds, and they're going to rebound and defend better than anybody else, and they're going to make more shots, and Steph's going to hit a million shots, and, oh, if he doesn't, Kevin Durant's going to score 40. The end.
Usually it's talking about how great they are, what makes them so great, how versatile they are, how they can still win even when they're not playing that great. Like, that's they're the best team we've ever seen. And it's a challenge to analyze them in great depth. It's a challenge to find original takes about them, for sure. I'm totally with you.
These questions, the things that we're talking about, are entirely separate from the question of whether or not any of this is their fault or they should be blamed for it, or Kevin Durant, or any of that. This is all independent of that. The Warriors did everything right. They have smart ownership that put smart people in charge. Forget light years ahead. They genuinely tried to have an organizational structure that was forward-thinking, progressive, technology-forward, stretched the limits of character and imagination, made bold moves in firing its coach. They empowered Stephen Curry. They saw the pace and space revolution coming and embraced it. They did all of these things. Their coaching staff unlocked all of this potential because that team was just another second round out in 2014, and now they're this juggernaut in large part because of Kerr. Draymond Green made the most of his career. He was supposed to be a tweener and nothing more than just like a second round, like, glue guy, and yet he's one of, you know, arguably one of the best defensive players we've ever seen. Kevin Durant had every right to go to the Bay. We've talked about this ad nauseum. He has every right to make that decision. He was a free agent. He gets to make that decision. This is not about anything. This is not about making the Warriors the bad guys. They're not responsible for this. They want to win a title, and they did everything possible to win a title, and they're going to, and that's awesome for them. But the rest of the league is an entertainment product, and it's suffering because of how good they are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends how you define suffering, because my thing is, like we talked about, like I enjoyed this regular season as much as any. And to me, the league isn't, like, a lot of, like, the way I follow the league is, like, based on the characters in the league and the personalities in the league and the different styles of play that different teams have and different players have. And, like, I genuinely find, like, a team like the Blazers or the Jazz or the Wolves to sometimes be, like, a lot more compelling than, like, the Cavs and the Warriors.
But
and
the thing is, I don't think you can reasonably expect other people to be that way.
Yeah, maybe
like,
not.
Like, we do watch sports for the winner. That's what we watch sports. Like, we watch sports to see who wins.
Yeah, that's not how I do it, but sure.
No, I'm not asking, but I don't think you can say that your approach is better or that people should be like
no!
Like, you should be able to watch a basketball game and not know who's going to win. That's the whole point of sports. Like, this is why these conversations get so existential, because it's like, we're talking about the very nature of sports, and the very nature of sports is competition. And sports are not competitive. Like, the NBA is not competitive right now.
I think it's competitive outside of the very top. Like, we had a lot of trouble figuring out how, like, every other part of the playoff picture was going to shake out. Before it did. We had a lot of trouble figuring out some of these playoff series. We have two really good second round series going on right now that are at 3-2 that could legitimately go either way. But you're right. Like, there's a big void in terms of, like, it appears there's this giant gap. And I guess the actual distance there we'll kind of find out in the next round. Like, I think the fact that the Jazz and the Raptors looked so helpless in the second round is, like, that supports your argument. And there's a good possibility that whoever those teams play in the conference finals, they're going to have no chance either. It's just going to be massively one-sided, and we're going to be sitting here waiting for the finals. Like, that, there's a good possibility of that. And I understand the drawbacks to it, but again, it's not something that I'm, like, staying up at night, like, worrying about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I get that, but I think that part of it, I think, what I'm really tired of is this, stop complaining. I'm so tired of people complaining about being boring. I'm so tired of it. Just, if you can't enjoy good basketball, no, look, you don't get to decide whether people enjoy. Like, it's great. Like, it's you don't get to decide that. Like, we don't get to decide those things. Like, it's okay that people think that the Grizzlies are a trudge and are difficult to watch, or that they hate watching the Clippers, or that they think James.
But that's not how you feel about either of those teams.
Or that they think James Harden is nothing more than a flopping flopper who flops, and all he does is draw free throws, and they miss all of the other things about his game because they notice those things. Like, it's okay. Like, people get to feel how they feel about these sports, right? Like, that's how it goes. The problem is that these conversations are being had at such a level to where I don't think you can take the approach that, well, it doesn't bother me, as it not being a problem. That is something I think is worth considering. But
at what point does that become, like, concern trolling the NBA? Like, what are you genuinely worried about from your own perspective? Like, what do you actually care about? And at what point are we just like, oh, I think maybe the league should be worried about this, when you don't actually care? Because I think if I was to sit here and, like, go on and on about how bad this is, like, it really wouldn't be genuine. Because it's not my job to worry about what's, like, great for the league. Like, that's for executives that work for the NBA to worry about.
I think that assumes I disagree. Because I think that the NBA is a money-making venture, for sure. But it exists on multiple levels. These sports exist on multiple levels. And there's one level, which is the corporate entity that produces money, right? And makes players and coaches and executives and GMs, and especially owners, millions and millions and millions of dollars. But then there's also, it's a cultural entity. Like, the NBA is a cultural part of, it's a part of our culture. And we have a stake in that because it is still driven by fans. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, it's built for fan enjoyment. And if a lot of fans of the NBA, which you can classify every medium, no, I'll take that back because there's a lot of members I know that I think would rather do anything else. There are a lot of media members that I think we would consider to be fans of the NBA. And I think at that level, if they really are like, I genuinely am concerned that people are not enjoying the sport as much as they should. Because, like, I always think about this. I'm really worried that we're in a golden era that's going to be kind of torn down by Golden State. That we're not going to remember any of these teams. We're not going to remember any of these players because it's just going to be, that's all we're going to talk about is Golden State won 4 titles.
I mean, that might be the dominant story, but I'm not sure. Like, I look fondly back at, like, the 7 Seconds or Less Suns and, like, the Rick Adelman Kings is, like, some of, like, my favorite teams ever. Like, my favorite teams were not always the one that won the title. So, and I think there are a lot of people like me there. Like, you hear people extolling the virtues of, like, the Sean Kemp, Gary Payton Sonics still. Like, you
but those teams existed. Those teams existed in that context where they did not win, but they could have won.
I mean, but Jordan was stopping all these teams, and then later other teams were stopping these teams. Like, I guess, like, there is a subtle difference in, like, having the hope that they're going to break through.
It's important.
Or not.
I think it's important.
But that is where, like, I am kind of interested in, like, what do, like, if Utah keeps everyone, like, do their fans think they might have a chance in, like, 5 years? I think some of them do. I think they'd probably say, like, this isn't happening next year or the year after. The Warriors are too good. But I do think they're, like, building something that they're hoping can be sustainable and built on.
And there's always the chance. There's seriously the chance that, like, they just blow up because – and the reason I say this is not just, like, a outlier thing. Look, the Shaq and Kobe should have won 6 titles, but they did not. And
exactly.
Like, all of these teams, like, egos are a thing. And imagine living with Draymond Green for 9 months out of the year.
Also, imagine Draymond Green breaking his leg, and I don't like thinking about that. I don't like bringing it up, but, like, that team, like, something like that happens, they're all of a sudden a lot shakier.
I still think they win. They got Kevin Durant.
I mean, maybe, but I don't think it's as much of a sure thing.
Yeah. Just the way we talk about these things is just so absurd. Like,
no, I mean, it's crazy that they're that good. Yeah, you know, it's crazy.
Okay, well, I'm glad we talked about it. We're going to talk about more. Like, this is going to be a conversation because I guess here's the thing. Part of it is this is the default because if you can't talk about who's going to win because you know who's going to win, you can't talk about they're going to win. You have to talk about is it good that you know they're going to win? Like, that's the next step in that conversation, you know?
Yeah, but I do think we overstate it sometimes because, like, if we're going into a Cavs-Warriors finals, like, we're going to talk about, like, how the Cavs make Stephen Curry, like, be a defender and, like, how Tristan Thompson can switch onto smaller guys and, like, if Kyle Korver and Channing Frye are going to be able to play together without getting exploited on the other. Like, we're going to talk about basketball stuff.
I mean, we
like,
are.
That series, like, we're waiting for that series.
We are.
But we're going to do that. No. We're even going to force it in the next round when the Warriors play the Spurs or Rockets. We're going to talk about strategy.
No, but
it might become moot after 2 games if the Warriors win them both by 30, but we're going to at least start there.
But look, you know, it's all – most of that's gone. It's – you know, Tristan Thompson does a great job switching on to small. So, you know, the Cavaliers know that if they get into a 4-5 with Draymond when they go small with KD, then they can just switch and then Tristan can crowd Stephen Curry. Well, then he just gives the ball to Kevin Durant, who's guarded by a guard. That's it. It's over.
So what you're saying is nothing matters.
Yes! That is what I'm saying, is that I don't know. There's that part of me that's like, look, man, sometimes a team just wins a basketball game. Like, that stuff happens. Like, yeah, just they didn't play well. The other team played well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is, like, do that twice, and we got a series. But if we're going to talk about stuff that I can actually break down and analyze, I don't have anything to bring to the table because it's reductive. It's the Warriors have an advantage at every single position. There are no weaknesses. For example, one of the things I used to say was the best way to do it is you make Draymond shoot. That's like the best way to go about it is you make Draymond Green be a shooter and you say, look, if Draymond Green beats me and puts up 40 points, then fine. But everybody else we're going to lock down on. Well, guess what? Draymond Green's shooting the lights out of the ball now.
Well, that was the Jeff Van Gundy quote, right? Like, it, you let Draymond do that, and if he makes them, you lose. Okay. Like, that's the strategy. Is you let him shoot, and if he makes them, it's over.
I can't wait for the summer. The summer is becoming the most fun time in the NBA because you get trades and free agency, and that stuff is actually, you know, it's uncertain. There's uncertainty in the summer, and that's what we've got because the spring has become fairly certain. Although I still say, yeah, I've enjoyed this Rockets Spurs series. We'll see who wins tonight.
Me too.
It's been good. I think, you know, Celtics Wizards could have been better. Maybe these last two games will make up for it. I keep thinking we're going to get one game where both teams play well and it's tight, but maybe not.
I will say, I think I'm coming off as like very, like, it's fine. Like, the NBA is good, but I am of two minds about it because, like, it would be disingenuous to be like, yeah, I've loved these playoffs. Like, they've been okay. Like, they're definitely, like, I think I tweeted while I was watching the last Jazz Warriors game. Like, I missed the regular season. I genuinely did. I was just like, what? I don't understand the point of what I'm doing right now. And I can't flip to another game that's better because this is all that's on. And that has been annoying. But I also think, like, we're not, like, as like NBA fans, observers, whatever, like, we're not entitled to every game being good. Like, there's a certain cost that comes with having these super teams, and that cost is that they're going to blow teams out sometimes, or a lot of times.
My
and
thing is, when it's bad basketball,
you can either watch that or you can tune out.
And you're right that we're not obligated to get basketball because there's plenty of series that are competitive but not good, right? Like Raptors Heat last year was competitive. It was not good. I don't have an expectation for the games to always be competitive. I think I have an expectation for the outcome to be uncertain, and that is what is gone right now, and that is where my concern lies. But nonetheless, we soldier on because basketball is awesome, and basketball will always be awesome. I don't know if I'm going to be available tomorrow for podcast. It depends on what happens with Rockets Spurs Game 6. If the Spurs win, I'll be headed home back to Colorado to save my wife from two children. If the Spurs or the Rockets manage to win tonight, I'll be headed over to San Antonio. And we'll probably will have a Friday afternoon pod. Send us your hot takes. I want to hear them at Matt Moore CBS. Tag at Outside the NBA as well. James, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.